Good morning and welcome to the Ask Weldon Show, episode 257. Today, the title of the show is... Let me pull up the title of the show. Where is it? The title of the show is Qualities You Need to Go Pro, Tim Ferriss for League of Legends, and NFL-style playbooks? Today, we're going to go through four questions instead of three questions because I'm trying to catch up. We just restarted the show after the season, and so I have a lot of... questions still in my question bank that I need to get through before I get to the new questions. And so I just want to jump right into it. Let's jump into question number one today. And this question is from Evan.
Hi, Weldon. This is Evan from California. My question is, when looking to pick up players for the LCS or Academy, what qualities in the players do you look for? How do you determine who will make the cut?
All right. So if I'm speaking specifically pro players in League of Legends, the qualities are the ability to learn rapidly. So you have to have the, you have to get centered in the camera here. You have to already be high rank, which means that you have the ability to have fast reaction speed, accurate mouse clicking, and game sense for League. And then from that, it's just about how quickly you can learn. If you can learn within a game how to execute a win condition, that's great. If you can learn within a day how to play a new champ, if you can learn within a week how to play a new champ, if you can learn within a... Like Caps, for example, can pick up a new champ, and within a day of spamming, he can learn a lot of the matchups, just kind of like he intuitively can figure out how he should play into a certain champion, whereas some people need to make every single mistake and have it beat into their body before they figure it out. And they need to be like, oh, wow, they can kill me like that. Oh, wow, they can kill me like that too. Oh, wow. You know, and then they go to the next champion and they're like, oh, wow, I can get killed by this champion that way. Whereas some players just like they theorycraft it out automatically. So a lot of that is learning speed, and that is probably the most important quality for a pro player. If you want a consistent and long career that is strong and meta independent. If we're talking about general sports, esports, it's just going to be your ability to lead, your ability to dissect the game and figure out a way to train that is going to lead the team to the highest level. And then also your ability to keep the team happy and on task while you're going through the losing parts of that. So yeah, thanks for the question. Jumping into announcements. No real big announcements for the day. I'm trying to start up the stream consistently, but that does not mean that I'll be streaming on the weekends. I'm going to be aiming Monday through Friday, and then I'm going to have to pause for things like TwitchCon, home office days, scouting camps that we might be doing, etc. So just let me know what games you want me to play, and be sure to turn on notifications so you know when I go live during the day, and I'll try to be here around 10 or 11 every day and piecing out around, you know, three or four-ish, and we'll do the show more or less at the kickoff of the stream. So keep that in your back pocket. Let's go on to question number two. This one is from John.
Hi, Weldon. Hi, John. You're doing well. My question is, are you familiar with the Tim Ferriss's DIS method for learning new skills? And if so, how would you apply it to League of Legends?
All right. I am not familiar with this method. I don't know what it stands for. I'm assuming it comes from one of his books. But generally, I think that from listening to a lot of Tim Ferriss, most of what he says comes down to common sense. Like, you look at something and you dissect the most important parts of it, and you do that. Duh. And most people just kind of AFK brain or autopilot into stuff because they're doing it for fun instead of thinking about it analytically. And his main approach is just to think about it analytically. But the real answer is that 99% of statistics are made up, including this one, is that most of learning and skills learning comes down to motivation. You need good motivation, and then you need a better system. So if you have really high motivation and like a crappy training method, you're not going to get as far as if you had a better training method. And if you have a really good training method and no motivation, you're not going to learn anything anyway. So you can have a really good training attack towards the game, and you're not going to have the motivation to overcome adversity. And so it's going to be pretty irrelevant mentally and neurologically. As you're going through the steps, you're just not going to be learning because you don't care. So I would say work on motivation first, and then just always be inquisitive about your method. When I was doing language learning, my motivation drove me to always seek better ways of language learning. But I learned the language because I was motivated to learn the language. And there are lots of languages I didn't learn because I was not motivated to learn them, even though I had the methodology after that. So, again, it just comes down to extreme levels of motivation and then figuring out the system rather than just bashing your head against a wall. But for a lot of skills in life, you can bash your head against a wall and get pretty far. And also, take Tim Ferriss's ideals with a grain of salt, because he gets like adequately better than average in a number of skills, but he's not like a gold medalist, right? He's not like the best person on the planet out of 7 billion people at the things that he's doing. And those people generally have more insight into the finesse of mastering something, fully mastering it, than somebody who kind of like halfway masters a lot of different things. The Renaissance man, as it were. So Renaissance men are very intriguing and very fun and great to listen to and very cool to put up on pedestals and be like, wow, they can do all this stuff. But they often don't teach as much in terms of ultimate performance and human mastery as people who have dedicated themselves to a single craft all the way to the extreme. So make sure that you balance out your understanding of whatever he's talking about with reflections that you get from people who've gone all the way. And I don't mean in business, by the way, because that doesn't count. There's too much random chance involved in that for anybody to have a lot of insight. Mostly I'm talking about stuff where you have to actually beat a bunch of other people in a competitive arena of reaction speed based mastery, where there's little to no chance because we crafted a game that removes chance as much as possible. Okay. Yeah, well, I can't do anything about the mic boom, so thank you, Twitch chat. But yeah, jumping into question three, before we jump into that, I want to talk about the Mac program. The Mac program is my online training course right now. It's an online video training course composed of 49 videos, 7 sessions over 7 weeks. Each session is a video about 15 to 25 minutes long that includes a seated mindfulness training on a lecture portion. Sometimes there's homework that is included, sometimes there's not, because a lot of the homework was lost through the various iterations of the website, but I'm not really going back and restoring it because I don't really like online courses anyway. I'm trying to turn it into a more interactive app, as I have been for the last year and a half. So pretty much all proceeds of the single purchase for life price right now go toward the development of the app. And then, of course, you get lifetime. It's kind of like a self-funded Kickstarter, I would say. So like if you purchase the online course, because I don't particularly like online courses, you will also get lifetime access to the app when it comes out, even though the app will eventually be a subscription model. So, mindfulness, six-minute commitment. What is it about? It's about the science of high performance, so performance psychology, and the course takes you through the fundamentals that I've taken a lot of other teams through, professional players, professional teams, around the ideas of mindfulness, acceptance, commitment, training. So, acceptance, commitment comes from ACT therapy, or ACT, acceptance, commitment, therapy, which is basically along the ideas of making sure that you accept reality and accept your limitations and accept what the game or the task is telling you about how good you are and being okay with that. And then committing yourself to the action that you know will get you where you want to go in a day, in a week, in a month, without taking too much of a negative identity from that. You know, not saying I did bad, therefore I am bad, but I did bad and I want to get better and this is how I do it. And then mindfulness being the skill that you use to kind of separate yourself from your internal dialogue, from the emotions that typically drive your behavior, and let you choose instead the best behavior for the particular action, what should we call poise, which is the ability to act in service of your values and the things that you want like logically, versus acting in service of your emotions and the things that you feel like you want to do right then. So that's poise, which is what the program is all about, developing. You can check that out, mindgames.gg. Use the code ASKWELDON to signify that you come here from YouTube. Okay, jumping into question number three, mental recovery from an acute injury. And this question is from, let me see if I can remember, Buyo?
Hey, Weldon. So in season 5 and season 6, I ended up hitting Challenger. Never breaking past top 50, but I think I peaked at rank like 62 or something. I don't remember. But right after season 6 ended, I broke my wrist on my mouse hand. And since then, I haven't peaked past Diamond 4. And part of it is physical limitation because my wrist isn't 100% what it used to be. But I also think it's partially mental because there are days where I feel almost back up to legit high ELO level mechanics-wise, but I still can't quite get there mentally. Do you have any tips to kind of get past that mental block? Thanks.
All right. This is a really good question. Mental recovery from acute injury is a specific set of research within sports psychology that is quite large. And a lot of practitioners work specifically in this space. It's not a joke. There are some people that never get back up to the form after they have an acute injury due to fear of re-injury. And that probably is not the case in esport. So if we're talking specifically about your wrist, you're probably not afraid of pushing your limits physically because you're afraid that you're going to re-injure your wrist. And by that, I mean, like a soccer player would be afraid to go to the extremes he did before to make a shot after he already like broke his ankle, for example. Or he might be scared of a certain tackle or a certain defensive move because he's afraid of that re-injury. Whereas before, he never even thought about it, you know, it never entered his mind. So that hesitation, that moment of doubt is what inhibits his play. So for you, it's probably more like a mindset of the simplest way to explain this, and this isn't exactly how it works out, but this is a really good way for you to paraphrase the phenomenon in your mind, is the growth mindset versus static mindset or something, whatever the opposite of that is, that is proposed by that. What is the lady's name? I can't believe I'm blanking this. I'm not gonna keep this blank. I'm gonna go look. Growth mindset by Dweck. Yeah, Dweck. So there's growth versus fixed. Yeah, growth versus fixed. Where you might be thinking, okay, I have an injury, so it's holding me back, and you are perceiving your actions through the lens of this is a limitation caused by this thing. I would like you to have a positive psychology mindset towards your injury. If you think this is like a mental tackle thing. And normally I try not to lecture too much about positive psychology or talk about it, because the image that people have of positive psychology is some, you know, little girl standing in front of a mirror in a bathroom going, "You can do it." And then like wanting to go on to be president if they tell themselves in the mirror every single morning that they can do it, you know, and that's like how you achieve success in the world is through self-edification. That's not really what I'm talking about. Although that is a pop culture phenomenon that you'll see that has a basis in positive psychology. What I'm talking about is that I want you to have the perception and the opinion that you will do physical therapy on your wrist and you will go through a set of strengthening exercises and mobility exercises that, because you are tackling this intentionally and tackling it hard, you will actually end up with a stronger, more mobile, and more physically apt wrist than before your injury. And we see this time after time in sports injuries. There are really two classifications of people who undergo sport injury. There's a lot, okay, but there's two that I want to bring up. And one of them is the person who doesn't recover to the same level. And the other one is the person who supersedes the level that they previously had. And what we discover is that The biggest mindset difference is that the people go into the injury with the idea, I'm going to be better than before my injury. And they pour a ton of work into that joint or that set of joints if they want to keep it balanced, the right and the left shoulder, even though it was just the right shoulder that was injured. And because they learn more about that joint, they work all the small muscles around that joint with like exercises that they never would have done before their injury. Because they adapt and improve their technique in ways that is like more correct and gives more, this was a bad habit that I was doing before and it was tweaking the joint, but I never cared about it because I wasn't injured. Now I'm going to do it correctly. Because they do all of these things, they end up with a cleaner game, a cleaner execution, a better movement. Their joint ends up stronger and more mobile and more sport-like after the injury because they spent so much time focusing on it and their weakness became their strength. So I would like you to take that mindset. For example, your wrist is actually not that important in FPS games. If you look at the top performing FPS players on the planet, you will find that a majority of them move their mouse primarily from their gross joints, so the shoulder and the elbow. And the wrist plays a very small part of their accuracy because they've trained themselves as calligraphers do with their shoulder, which is a much larger and more precise muscle, but requires more training, especially if you're out of a habit. So you could say, okay, I'm going to take advantage of this to become a better player than I could if I limited myself to like resting my forearm on a locked surface and like just moving everything with my wrist. So you're going to go into the gym and you're going to be doing a lot of push-ups and you're going to be doing a lot of like forward, backward, wrist mobility stuff, and you're going to be doing yoga, and you're going to be doing a lot of gripping stuff and stuff with bands and really researching a lot on Reddit and from physical therapy books about wrist mobility and how to strengthen your forearm and your whole like upper body structure that's connected from your back all the way to your wrist through, you know, your trap three muscles all the way to your trapezius and just everything in there, right? You're going to become an expert on that. And then you're going to tackle from the ground up your mouse speed and your mouse accuracy, starting with like the most basic training games, moving up to games like Osu, which are just like speed training games for accuracy and like concentrating on immobilizing your wrist or using it as the small accurate part at the end and instead focusing on a calligrapher movement where you're using your elbow and your arm and you have a 600 DPI mouse setup that you're just using to get that kind of like large accurate movement. If you build that up from the ground and you have this mindset of I will be better than before, you can conquer whatever it is that is kind of like holding you back, even if you think that physically you're the same and mentally you're deficit. You have to reverse your mental definition of where you're headed and what your injury did to you. All right. Thank you for that question. And I hope that was helpful. Let's jump into the last question of the show. This one is from David.
Hi, Weldon.
Hi, David.
Do you think League of Legends will ever develop extensive systems and playbooks such as seen in American football? Why or why not?
Okay, this is an interesting question, comes up a lot. The answer is no, because we don't have pauses. So every single play in the game is contingent on the previous play and is called as an audible. And so we can't have very set, strong plays because the game is not set up to be uninterruptible. The most that we can have is like basic calls. The playbooks are going to be, because the game state is not the ball sitting in the middle of the field and 10 players on the field, or whatever, however many players there are on the field, there's like thousands more game states in League of Legends, like per minute, than there ever would be in football, where there's basically just like two. You're on offense or you're on defense, and the ball is, you know, there's just so many fewer variables in football that determine like what the best play is. And yeah, so it's always going to be, and because literally every 2 weeks they change the game completely. The game is just completely changed. And then everything that you trained went out the window. So while some of the hurdles I didn't mention are things like, we don't have a training team that we can run drills against. We don't have a game that we can restart from the middle of the game over and over again and run drills over and over again like we could in practice to refine a playbook. Those are things that might, like technological limitations that might come away in the future. So in the future, maybe teams will be able to pay 10 professional players at the peak level so that we can have internal scrimmages only. You'd have to take five players out of the professional pool, and they wouldn't get to be starters for that to happen. Maybe in the future, there will be a tool that we can use to train League of Legends where you can pause the game and you can set up the game with a specific game state and do it over and over again and run drills. We don't have that. Riot is nowhere near close to making anything like that, so that's like completely out of the window. Maybe in the future we'll be able to pause games on stage and talk about stuff, have tactical pauses, probably unlikely. Maybe in the future we'll be able to call in to the coaches during tactical pauses. I think those are unlikely. So the answer is it will never look like NFL with NFL style playbooks. It will always look more like hockey or basketball, where everything is like fluid and builds off of each other. So yeah, that's the show for today. Thank you all for your questions. Please be sure to call in your question, anchor.fm/WeldonGreen/message. If you're on the web or if you're in the app, you just go to the Weldon Green page and there you can submit a question. And make sure to come to Twitch, twitch.tv/mygamesweldon for the rest of this stream where I'll be answering questions in Twitch chat. And you can sub. It's September, so everything's half off. And I think you get a bunch of deals with Twitch Prime, so you can look forward to that. And then also, of course, we're going to play some video games. And yesterday I won my first two opening Apex games, so that was pretty dope. And hopefully today we can do a repeat. See you later.